BFF.FM.
I'm not crazy. My mother had me tested.
Best frequencies forever.
Walking all day with my mouth on fire, trying to get talking to you. Walking all day with my mouth on fire, that's what I've got to do. Trying to get talking to you. Walking all day with my feet on fire, trying to get closer to you. Walking all day with my feet on fire, that's what I've got to do. Trying to get closer to you. Walking all day with my mind on fire, I can't stop thinking of you. Walking all day with my mind on fire, that's what I've got to do. I can't stop thinking of you. Walking all day with my hands on fire, I wanna get to touch you. Walking all day with my hands on fire, that's what I've gotta do. Wanna get to touch you.
Morning. You're listening to TV on the Radio here on BFF.FM. I'm Jessica, and I'm here with Leah. Good morning, Leah.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I'm wonderful. That was Graham Coxon with Walking All Day, and Graham Coxon did the soundtrack and score for a show called The End of the Fucking World.
Excellent.
Yeah. Have
Love you to seen see it? Graham Coxon getting some work.
Yeah.
No, I'm just here. I haven't seen it. I'm just here to talk about Graham Coxon, actually.
That's fine, because you're blur people, right?
I'm blur people.
Yeah, we've established that.
Yes.
We've been in bar fights about it.
Yeah.
End of the Fucking World, a Netflix original, as we call British programming that is imported.
Yes, a Channel 4 production, now a Netflix original.
Channel 4, they do some good work.
They've always been the best.
Really?
Always, yeah.
Did you like the show?
I loved it, yeah. I really, really liked it. I thought it was utterly original and, sort of hard to peg. It was it has a lot going on and was really interesting and very well done.
I thought so too. So End of the Fucking World finds us with a teenager named James, who identifies as a psychopath.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And a young woman
Why am I speaking like this? A young man named James and a young lady, another high school student who comes from a broken home, sort of. She's an angry young teen, and they get off on an adventure together.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I just loved it. It kind of starts with this misdirect where he's like a misanthropic psychopath. He like murders small animals and all the stuff that, you know, you do in the triad of sociopathy. Actually, I don't know if he would as bad.
Yeah,
they don't go over that at all.
I don't know.
And then, spoiler alert, like we quickly find that it's just this sort of defense mechanism or something, and his icy exterior is quickly melted, and I just found it the most beautiful and heartbreaking romance I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it was really, really interesting. It was sort of like, it was kind of like a Wes Anderson version of a Bonnie and Clyde.
a little bit, yeah.
It was...
It's not as twee.
I mean, yes, visually, that's sort of what it reminded me of, and it's done not almost entirely, but there's a heavy, heavy emphasis on voiceovers from each of the main characters.
Mm-hmm. I loved that part.
Yeah, and I did too, and was surprised to find that I loved that, because that can be a trope that is overused and not used well, and here I thought that it worked really well.
I thought they actually used that very judiciously, mm-hmm. and instead of using voiceover for exposition, mm-hmm. it was always to show us the contrast between what they were saying and what they were actually thinking, which was so great for like a show about teens, especially these two teenagers who are both like troubled and trying to act tough, or like they don't care or don't have emotions, and the drama is essentially compelled by their feeding off of each other's mm-hmm. bravado in a way, and they use the voiceover to show that they're both like scared and unsure, and I loved that use of voiceover. And I also love both their accents.
Yes.
I loved his voice. Mm-hmm. His voice reminds me a lot of John Ronson, of the writer and of This American
Frequent
Life.
This American
occasional
Life
segment fame. It had a similar voice and a similar accent and sort of a similar dryness with his descriptions.
Yeah, I thought it was really very I didn't really get a similarity to John Ronson's voice, which, no offense to you, I know that you're a Ronson stan, but his voice is like not easy to listen to, and I found that
John Ronson's?
Yes.
Oh,
and
really?
I found that James, the protagonist, in The Fucking End of the World, had a very like measured calm, soothing voice that, would lull you into adventures with him, even as he expresses a desire to murder things.
Right. I guess we should explain it. Sort of starts, she drags him along because she's kind of running away from home in a not very well thought out way. Mm-hmm. She's just mad at her pushover mom and her gross stepdad.
Yes.
And I think wants to, you know, do something to get attention or to have a story to tell later. And he has decided, he's, you know, escalating his psychopathic behavior, mm-hmm. and decides he wants to kill a person.
Yeah.
And she, you know, falls into his life, and he said, thinks, you know, she's as good of a person to kill as any. So this starts with him, like, planning at some point to stab her to death.
Yes.
Mm-hmm, and from there, romance blossoms.
Yeah. And not even, it really doesn't fall into any of the traps that you would expect. There are things that you sort of see coming, and then things that are unexpected. And, it's just really, really refreshing to see something that's different and not another, you know, I don't know, whatever, CBS procedural.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a, you know, teen manhunt show.
Right.
And it's very, very hard to categorize, but it was thoroughly enjoyable and really, sweet. And as you said, with the voiceovers, I thought they were used to really good effect to, as you said, illuminate mm-hmm. sort of their inner monologue and what's really going on with them. My husband actually told me this yesterday, okay. that he was listening to some podcast and they were talking about the show, and they mentioned that
someone else has a podcast about TV.
Apparently they mentioned that all of her voices, all of her voiceovers are in the present tense, and James are all in the past tense.
Oh yeah,
mm-hmm. So
that's a good point.
Yeah,
I mean, if you know how the show ends, so we always do spoiler alerts, but spoiler alert, we're going to talk about how the show ends. So if you mm-hmm. haven't watched it yet, you should tune out. But I was really emotionally affected by this show, and I went from like getting. Got such a warm feeling from their blossoming romance. And then as time goes on in the show, they're on the run and everything's escalating. And I was just overwhelmed by the bleakness of the possibility for them. And I think what was interesting about this show for me is, they end up, Melissa's almost raped, and yes. James unexpectedly comes to her rescue by stabbing this guy in the neck. And then instead of doing what you should probably do, which is, you know, call the police and explain that it was self-defense, they go on the lam and mm-hmm. things just like snowball from there. And it was like a, you know, like a Thelma and Louise type thing, or it's this like adult narrative, like a classic thing where people are backed into a corner and death is kind
choices
of the
are
only
narrowing
option.
Yeah.
Of Mice and Men is another one, but these two very vulnerable teenagers are stuck in that role instead. And I thought The End of the Fucking World was such a great title for it, because it really encapsulates, like, that's what you think everything is when you're a teenager.
Yes.
And really, like, almost at any point in the story, they probably could have just, like, opted out of this chase and their lives, you know, maybe they would have gone to jail, but they probably could have claimed self-defense or something, and they would have had their lives back. But it ended in this really, like, I don't know.
It ended in an unambiguous way.
It did. So, yeah, we should talk about that, too. So he kind of takes the bullet for her or whatever, and mm-hmm. he runs. It ends fading to black with a gunshot, and it's not clear what happens, but I read that in the comic book that this is based on, that it's unambiguous that mm-hmm. he dies so that she can, you know, claim that she was kidnapped or whatever mm-hmm. the rest of the whole time and go on and have a normal life. But in the show, they leave it ambiguous. And I found that a little bit cynical, like leaving the door open for, like, maybe that didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that... I mean, that's definitely one reading of it, is that they're like, hey, let's just keep printing our End of the Fucking World t-shirts and money and, like, let's baby season two. It's all a dream. He was in the shower the whole time. But I also thought that it was sort of interesting, because it does leave all these possibilities open for you to think about.
It's
like, did he kill himself? Did the police kill him?
Right.
Did he, did they miss and he's just running? And it escalates also because he turned 18.
Yes.
At the end, which would allow him to be tried as an adult, which obviously faces a much steeper penalty for murder. Mm-hmm. I didn't mind it being left ambiguously in the end.
Okay.
But
I thought it was a little bit of a cop-out, you know. I thought that's what made the story poignant, is that these two people are sort of, like, blossoming emotionally and finding each other where they did not expect to find, mm-hmm. like, didn't expect to connect with anyone. Like, that fact that it's just when they are, you know, having a little epiphany that's when their story is cut short.
Yeah, the last line is his voiceover saying, I'd finally understood what it meant to care about someone. And
right.
then I think that maybe that's the end of the fucking world. Like, there's nowhere to go from there if mm-hmm. you've, like, deadened all your senses for so many years. Or then you're like, that's what you have to do. Love is sacrifice, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess I skipped ahead to this part because of your point about his narration being in the past tense. Mm-hmm. That I think the last line he says is in the present tense.
Oh,
which
yeah.
is sort of a suggestion that that's the last time he narrates anything.
Yeah. it was really, really interesting. The first review I read about this show was Daniel Feinberg reviewed it for The Hollywood Reporter. And 85% of his review was like, please don't try to remake this as an American show.
Oh,
it's like,
God.
It's perfect and it works. And I think that same point stands for it doesn't, it stands alone. Like, let yeah. it be what it is. And it's interesting. Did you mention that there's talk of a season two?
Okay, I want to talk about this. I don't really know. I Googled it, and like one of the suggested Google searches is immediately season two. Mm-hmm. And it makes me so angry because I don't think there has been any like official talk about it. But with something like this, like if you run Vulture or whatever entertainment website and you don't write an article that has End of the Fucking World season two
yeah.
in the title to capture those clicks for people searching, yeah. then you know, you're missing out on those clicks. And it's so fucking the tail wagging the dog because now our information that we get is created by the anticipation of what people will be looking
yeah.
for.
And nothing, it's created by an algorithm.
Yes. yeah. Nothing means anything. I mean, we're going to...
It's the end of the fucking world, Jess.
We're going to be at a point where, like, the actual TV shows we watch are just, like, made by robots
yes.
that design things based on what they think we will click on when we have 8 million choices. I mean, that's actually already happening. I read a really terrifying article about YouTube
yeah.
and how
oh, yes.
children's programming is yeah. just made by robotic algorithms.
Yes.
And, you know, the robot doesn't know when not to put something super fucking disturbing
yeah, like
in there.
Spider-Man pooping.
And, yes, because mm-hmm. that gets clicks, too.
Yes.
It was dark.
Yeah.
It was really upsetting. And that's going to be us.
It's horrifying. Soon. That's going to be us with TV.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
It is the end of the fucking world.
Yeah. So, cheery. Cheery thought. No, but as always, if any of you guys have watched the show, we would love to hear from you. You could probably finish it during the rest of our show, actually. It's 18 to 22 minute episodes.
I loved the 19-minute runtime. Like, this is the first show I watched entirely on the bus
yeah.
and on the treadmill. I'm just kidding. Yeah. I've never been on a treadmill. But I did watch all... I didn't take any notes because I really was, like, at the gym or on the bus watching it. And it still... It packed up as much of a punch as
yeah.
any other. It didn't feel like, you know, I was watching a Vimeo short or something. It didn't feel like it... made any sacrifices to traditional like TV pacing
yeah.
at all. It was great. And
yeah.
there was so much music packed into every episode. I don't know how it wasn't just constant music all
yeah.
the time.
Yeah, and each episode was complete. There wasn't any like, oh, I have to sort of... My husband and I watched it over, I don't know, maybe three nights.
Mm-hmm.
And like to drag that little TV over three nights seems impossible. But It felt right. Like nothing was, as you said, nothing was like sacrificed, and they packed a lot into that show.
Yeah.
I mean, there are just so many things. And again, this is one of the hallmarks of British TV that we talk about every time we review a British show is like they do things that American shows don't do as well. I think
mm-hmm.
They let things develop in a much more organic way without as much exposition.
Yeah.
And you would think that for something with this little runtime that you would need to cram in some exposition.
Right.
And we don't, like, anything that happens to narrate their backstory is, it seems very organic and very, like, of time with the episode
yeah.
and doesn't seem forced. And yeah, I just think they do a really great job of letting things unfold without trying to tell you about things and letting people draw their own conclusions, like it's assuming that the audience is smart enough to,
yeah,
like put things together. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was just really beautifully haunting.
Yeah.
And yeah, definitely, definitely worth a watch.
Yeah. I want to play a song because yes, there are so many good songs spanning many genres in this show. This is a short one. We'll be right back.
Comb your hair and paint and powder. You act proud and I'll act prouder. You sing loud and I'll sing louder. Tonight we're setting the woods on fire. You're my gal and I'm your feller. Dress up in your frock of yeller. I'll look swell, but you look sweller. Setting the woods on fire. We're taking all the honky-tonks. Tonight we're having fun. We'll show the folks a brand new dance that never has been done. I don't care who thinks we're silly. You be daffy and I'll be dilly. We'll order up two bowls of chili. Setting the woods on fire.
Welcome back to TV on the Radio.
The end of the fucking world, guys.
Yeah. That was Hank Williams with Setting the World on Fire. Or Setting the Woods on Fire.
Oh.
End of the fucking world, woods, whatever. But anyway, we are talking the end of the fucking world. And the end for me of 23-minute episodes of TV. I'm never going back. Bring it in under 19 minutes or don't call me.
Yeah.
Leah.
Yes.
So do you think James thought himself a psychopath because he couldn't face the grief over his mom's suicide or because he witnessed her killing herself and didn't do anything about it as a tiny six-year-old and decided that he must have been a psychopath to have not saved his mom?
Yeah, I have a small digression to make. Please. About that. So there are some flashbacks to when his mother committed suicide in front of him by driving her car into a pond. And the kid that they got to play, the young version, mm-hmm, of James, is either the greatest actor of our generation or truly a psychopath. That kid had some dead shark eyes.
He did. He looked like a Edward Gorey cartoon.
That kid was truly, truly menacing. And
oh, I loved it.
I would drive into a pond also instead of looking at that every day.
Oh.
And I think that child actor is probably just amazing.
Yeah.
And whatever makeup budget they had was all spent on darkening his eyes clear, I hope. But to answer your question, yeah, I don't know. I think... Yeah, I think it probably was that he thought himself a psychopath for not doing anything to save to pull your mom from a car. I don't know. I mean, yeah. That's another thing that's sort of left. That's the interesting thing about the show is it doesn't provide any easy answers for anything. Yeah. It's also the action is driven mainly by Alyssa.
Yeah.
And she is, you know, someone who spurs him to feel for the first time, but mm-hmm. also clearly his downfall, like clearly his doom.
Yeah, I guess so.
And she is, like, my thing after the show was, like, what's left for her? Like, where does she go from here? Like, is she going to end up a housewife? Like, what's her path? Like, has this, like, set a clearly troubled girl down, like...
I don't think it's going to help.
Yeah, sure.
but I don't know. I mean...
But, yeah, there's just so much that's really sweet and poignant. Like, her sort of, like, interstitial voiceovers where he... says something and she's like, I just thought he was like proper beautiful.
That made me want to burst into tears.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. Just,
and she's like, I love him so much. Yeah. And yeah, just that. Yeah. There's so many layers in the show. And then she says, I loved him so much during, or I love him so much during the scene where he confronts her dad, mm-hmm. who's a total shitbag, hot, but a shitbag, where she's confronting her dad, and her dad is like, you share one thing with your mom, like, shit taste in men, and it's true on one level, like, this guy is so damaged and incapable of,
yeah,
you know, and he's just figuring out who he is, and realizing that he's not actually a psychopath and does feel things. And we also didn't mention that the guy that they had killed was potentially a serial killer, or yeah. at least somebody who had abused women extensively. So yes. I thought there was like a stash of dead women somewhere around house, which would be pretty, you know, yeah. lend credence to your self-defense theory.
Right. Well, that's the other thing that left the door open besides leaving the end slightly ambiguous was the guy's mom who mm-hmm. had found him dead had destroyed evidence.
Yes.
Like the Polaroids he had of like disgusting shit. But at the end, she does give his camcorder to yes. the police, which would suggest there's some complication to the storyline of her, you know, Alyssa or maybe both of them and what happens to them in the justice system.
Yeah. Which was alluded to by the good cop who was following them right. throughout and trying to, you know, understand what is going on in the mind right. of the teens.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought that they both did. I mean, the acting in this show was great. Mm-hmm. And they both did such a good job of, like, playing these damaged, like, emotionally, mm-hmm. like, walled off teenagers. But then, like, betraying their actual inner pain in very like judicious ways.
Yeah.
It gives you just enough. It wasn't.
Yeah.
No histrionic bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah. Being like heartbreakingly vulnerable yeah. in like tiny little moments. And this also is a peculiarly British thing, I think. But neither of these characters are conventionally attractive, but they are. Both like so filled with the like beauty of like youth, like yeah. I know I sound like a super creepy old person right now, but it's just like their potential as people just like shines through in yeah. that way that like all teens, even if they're like awkward and weird looking, mm-hmm. like you can see this, like you're like as radiant as you're ever going to yeah. be in your shitty, like pimply stage or whatever. But both of these actors were that like sneaky, like British, actually like weird looking, but actually gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like really, she really gorgeous.
Is so cute.
Yeah.
And yeah, she, it can be awkward looking, and they made her sort of weird when he gave her, they disguised their identity, which for her involved yeah. changing her hairstyle and yeah. clothes. And for him involved putting on a Hawaiian shirt.
And having a bad haircut, yeah. a bad, bad haircut.
But yeah, she is radiant. And when she was, they were dancing yeah. in that house and she did her little Pulp Fiction dance. She really is like yeah. compelling. And then he like confused me. I find him very cute in a yeah. teenager way, but part of him looks like he's 44 years old.
Yeah.
But then when he has his shirt off, he looks like he's 11.
Yeah. yeah.
And then his like pants that are too short with his white socks yeah. and black shoes. He was just, his physicality was very confusing.
Yeah.
But then his like his voice sounds very adult.
Yes.
Also.
Yeah, and his inflection yeah. and everything is very measured.
And I chalk it up to his acting, but his sort of complete deadness in mm-hmm. the first few episodes and the way his face transforms when he actually smiles is like
yeah.
it's really charming.
Yeah, and the yeah, there are these kids in this like extremely adult I don't know, that's not an adult experience I've had yet, murdering someone, but in this extremely adult situation.
Mm-hmm.
But then you see their, like, awkward makeout, like,
yeah.
where she's literally just smashing her face all over his. And, yeah, it's just really, really touching. And, yeah, it just makes you think about all that wasted potential out there, guys. Just, you know. Life is garbage, as my child says. She doesn't say life is garbage. She started saying that about different food. She said it's tastes like garbage.
What tastes like garbage?
Banana chia seed pudding.
That sounds delicious.
It's delicious. She's crazy, but she's 4, so she doesn't know. But anyway, I digress. Yeah, it's just really, really beautiful and poignant and sad and also mildly funny and
it's very
tragic.
Funny. I laughed out loud a few times.
Tragic. There is a dog murder in this show.
Oh my
you
god,
guys.
That was awful.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of dog murderers, should we talk about Alyssa's dad?
Oh, sure.
Who falls into the great tradition of TV's wayward dads?
Yeah. Like, interesting though. Like a wayward dad who's a total shitbag,
mm-hmm.
but. The thing I liked about this wayward dad is, like, he's definitely attractive, right?
Oh, God,
like,
yeah.
we're clear on that. He's very fuckable.
He's a
but
handsome man.
Yeah, he's a handsome man. But, like, you see him and you're like, yeah, this guy is, like, I know he's supposed to be a total dirtbag, but he's hot. And then you see, like, his sort of dime store, like, philosophy and his, like,
yeah.
intense yoga regimen. And you're like, okay, that at least makes sense. Like, this
right.
guy, like, thinks he's a mystical, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, poet or
yeah.
whatever. Like, wayward dads who are just hot but shitbags never make sense to me. I'm like, so what? You're like, carousing keeps you hot, I guess? I don't know. So I liked that
liked
they
that
gave
there was at least
I
yoga.
Liked that they gave him, like, at least, you know, he's just the narcissistic asshole.
Yeah.
Who,
that was a funny, like, it was a funny detail. He lived in this, like, trailer kind of on the beach in the
mm-hmm.
middle of nowhere, and it's just, like, was surrounded by exercise equipment.
Yeah.
Like, there's a stationary bike sitting outside.
Ellipticals.
And, like, you know, all of my neighbors have that trash in their yards, too, but, like, this guy actually used it.
Yeah. Yeah. And doing some very advanced yoga poses.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, I just, it's so classic TV, like, the character who is driven. Like, once they get off on this adventure, the point is she's going to go see her dad, who she hasn't seen since he walked out on them.
Yeah.
And I actually thought, the whole time that she was going to find out the dad's been dead and that it was her mom sending her the birthday cards.
Mm-hmm.
It
turns out her dad's just a shitbag and it
yeah.
was her mom sending her the birthday cards.
Yes. But yeah, I thought because she had never seen him since he left.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that meant she was going to find out he was dead. But instead, he's just a shithead. But yeah, there's a. I don't know. I guess because my dad, like, loved me enough.
Sure.
I can't relate. But I always find that so. Like, I wonder if all TV writers have, like, dads that left them.
Yeah.
And, like, that has driven their entire lives because. Yeah, there's Kelly Taylor.
Sure.
Tim mm-hmm. Riggins.
Like, yeah.
I was trying to think of more examples and I didn't, but I feel like that.
That other girl who fell in love with Tim Riggins in Friday Night
Oh,
Lights,
yeah, yeah.
It was all because her dad was a trucker.
Yeah.
And
I love it when the dad, like, blows back in for a 3-episode arc and, like,
mm-hmm.
everything's fun and then he leaves. He leaves in the dark.
Doesn't
of
show
night.
Up when he's supposed to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you have to use the check he left you to snort your first line of coke and. It's all downhill from there.
And then the check bounces.
Yeah.
All that.
It's a straight slide to intervention after that, which is also all about dads who didn't love you.
Yeah. Enough. But again, it's the, it's that conventional plot line, but sort of like turned, not even turned on its head, but like there's just that scene where she's like, you shouldn't like make people and then abandon them, yeah, because then their whole life they're going to think they did something wrong, which mm-hmm. like she has that clarity about herself, but like is unable to sort of stop this like super destructive path.
Right.
And like, yeah, it's just the show's really touching and poignant. Mm-hmm.
And it was also beautiful to look at. Like it took place in, from what I could tell, was a kind of a bleak British suburb, mm-hmm. but it eventually kind of becomes this road movie. And I feel like it got more and more physically beautiful, like as their relationship grew, like mm-hmm. the scenery became more beautiful. Like they drive over this big dramatic bridge,
yeah,
and then they end up like
there's
in
like
this
the windswept
beach.
Dunes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, and then they're at the literal end of the world, and that's where it all comes crashing down.
Yeah, or maybe not. I guess we'll have to wait till season
my God.
Two.
Yeah, if there's really a season two, I'm gonna be mad.
I'll watch it, but I'll
oh,
be
I'll
mad.
Watch the show.
Yeah.
when is season two of 13 Reasons Why coming? I know they're done filming.
Yeah, sometime this year, I think. I don't know.
Okay. What else? Do you want to talk about any of the tertiary characters?
Sure, yeah. So there's...
Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, that was, again, sort of interesting. Like, they're very tertiary characters, as you said. But there's, like, yeah, the good cop, bad cop partners who are on the heels of this duo, but yet they've had this, like, we're led to believe mm-hmm. sexual encounter despite one of the partners being in a relationship or like dating or not wanting to be with the other one. Yeah. And
or just they both think it's probably not a good idea professionally, but it happened.
I thought the one thought it was a good idea, the one from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, yeah, but anyway,
but yeah, I mean, there's just like everything is sort of fleshed out in
yeah.
an interesting way, again, that like really belies the like running time of this show. Like
yeah.
you get all this info about these people, like even
they give everyone texture, even if it doesn't, like, not everything has to be a fully fleshed out story.
Yeah,
but there's that's no reason not to, like,
the same with like the mom who discovers the murdered guy who is
yeah.
in turn a murderer potentially. She has like two or three scenes, mm-hmm. but they're all effective and in service of the story too.
Yeah.
I
felt like we went on a whole journey with Frodo, who only had one scene.
Poor Frodo.
Poor Frodo. That kid's face killed me.
Yes. When he's abandoned, he's ready to chuck it all in and go on the lam
yeah.
with them. And they lead him on thinking that they're going to do that as they lock his abusive mother in the, bathroom in the gas station,
yeah.
petrol station. yeah, it's just there's so much to the show, and yeah, it's a real thinker.
Yeah,
it's definitely stayed with me. I mean,
yeah, same
again for something that was so short and easily bingeable.
Mm-hmm.
It really sort of yeah, it really emotionally had an impact.
Yeah, same.
And it's just nice, as I said, to see something different that's not another version of something we've seen 8 times.
Oh yeah. I want to talk about that also when we get back. Let's do another song.
Yeah.
And we'll be right back.
There's a place where lovers go to cry their troubles away, and they call it Lonesome Town, where the broken heart stays. You can buy a dream or two to last you all through the years, and the only price you pay is a heart full of tears. Going down to Lonesome Town, where the stay. Going down to Lonesome Town to cry my troubles away. In the town of broken dreams, the streets are filled with regret. Maybe down in Lonesome Town I can learn to forget. Maybe down in Lonesome Town I can learn to forget.
All right, welcome back to TV on the Radio. This is the late, great Ricky Nelson.
He's dead.
I think so.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. Did he die young?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Probably. All those crooners died young, right? Except for old Blue Eyes. Whose carousing kept him alive forever.
I wonder how many people he was the wayward dad to. I'm sure Wikipedia.
Certainly Ronan Farrow.
Oh, yeah.
Frank Sinatra, not Ricky Nelson.
Right, right. My mom claimed that Ricky Nelson had lavender eyes, which I don't
seems
think that's possible. Maybe the black and white poster she had in her bedroom had colored in with marker.
Sure.
But yeah, if anyone knows the actual color of Ricky Nelson's eyes, you can tweet at us.
We're at BFF TV on the Radio, yeah. By the way.
Anything else about End of the Fucking World? I feel like there's probably a whole world of allusions to either Natural Born Killers or Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, which... But I don't understand because I've only seen Pulp Fiction and
I've sort of seen Pulp Fiction. Yeah,
yeah, so I've
I got
seen
nothing
Pulp Fiction
guys,
in
sorry.
Pieces. I've Me never too. Seen it all the way through. Yeah,
and
I don't
know.
Don't
at me, okay? I don't like Tarantino.
Yeah, same. I don't know anything about any of those. But yeah, I thought I got some really strong Wes Anderson vibes from this movie. Like, obviously not tonally, but I just felt like sort of it had like a darker Moonrise Kingdom vibe to it.
Okay.
I think it just did a really amazing job at like
making
kind you feel all the emotions.
Wes Anderson-y was the first episode when he's explaining himself to
and
us.
And you see him in the woods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's killing animals and then they do this funny shot of them like lined up.
Yeah.
Like they're all canoled.
Yeah.
That did ring very well.
Yeah. And I felt like sort of a lot of the shots were just them standing directly in front of the camera, mm-hmm. like staring ahead, but having these feelings. Like, I don't know. I just sort of got that. It was a very kind of internal show, which I tend to associate with Wes Anderson. And by the way, guys, I'm not even a big Wes Anderson fan. I think Wes Anderson's totally overrated. But I just sort of got that same vibe to it. And I think that that's really amazing that it's dealing with this like dark and serious subject matter, but has this kind of lightness to it and mm-hmm. like this real tenderness that was just brilliantly portrayed by the characters. Those actors are really, really great.
They're great. And I was surprised to learn that she is 25.
He's 22. Very surprising.
Like, he really does not look a day over 16, generously to me. But they're great. I'll watch anything else the two of them do. If I had thought ahead about the possibility of an American remake of this, I would have asked you who should star.
Dylan Minnette.
You know what? That's not the worst. Not the worst choice.
No, I'm trying to think who could sort of do that.
Taylor Lautner.
No, Taylor Lautner is forever that video of him catching fruit in his mouth to me now. I can never take him seriously.
I have not seen that.
Taylor Lautner is an A-plus teen / person. He seems genuine, like, because I don't think he's a teen anymore, but he seems like a genuinely good dude bro.
Okay.
But I digress. You need someone who could do a lot of like internal stuff, like convey a lot of stuff internally. And I think that's one thing. Yeah, that's one thing that I think Dylan Minnette's really good at.
Yeah.
Who else would be good?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to do too much.
I don't know. Well, who from Riverdale would be able to act this?
Cole Sprouse.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, he's a little too handsome. I feel like we need someone who's a little bit, like, more...
Sheldon Cooper.
Wait, who is that?
Oh, that old Sheldon Cooper on
from
Big Bang.
Big Bang Theory? That guy who's, like, 42
yes,
years old.
Jim Parsons.
Yes. Greatest actor of our generation.
Sure.
Or most award-winning actor of our generation.
Yeah, at least. That may be true.
From Riverdale. Yeah, no one from Riverdale. Well, I'll give this some thought when we were more writing our treatment.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything else?
It's just really easy to watch. It's not actually super easy to watch. Like, it deals with some dark subject matter. But, yeah, it's eminently watchable, and you should spend 2 hours or whatever of your day doing it. I advise, you watched this on the bus, so you broke it up.
Yeah, I think I watched it in like three days.
Yeah, I think it's, excuse me, I think it's, it sort of needs breaks in between, I think, just to kind of digest each episode.
Yeah, I mean, I think most TV benefits from actually digesting it, which doesn't stop me from binging it, usually.
Yeah, there's just so little binge-worthy stuff available now. So, yeah, this
did
was...
you binge the new season of Detectorists?
I even spread that out, mainly just for enjoyment reasons, because I love that show. If you guys listened to our show last week, 2 weeks ago, we did our top five of 2017. Mine was Detectorists, and season 3 of Detectorists is currently available on Acorn TV, which is yet another goddamn subscription service. I don't know how much it is a month, but they do the ubiquitous 7-day free trial, and there are 6 episodes of Detectorists, so you can absolutely binge your 6 episodes in that 7 days.
I know I'm going to sign up for it, intending to cancel during the trial period and just never do
I will pay just Sundance like now Sundance. Until I die.
Same.
Until I die.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem, and that's what they count on. Yeah. But Detectorists,
I was not to say I'm not going to do it. I
delighted to see that it absolutely gave me all the same feelings all the prior seasons did. And yeah, I love that show.
All right. Well, speaking of TV networks, if anyone out there gets Paramount Network and wants to invite me over to... You get it?
I get it. Paramount Network for those of you who don't know, is the reboot of Spike TV.
Yeah. It's funny to call it a... Because I was looking around this morning.
The rebrand I was of gonna Spike TV.
Record it, and I realized I don't get Paramount Network. And you told me it was formerly Spike.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently their programming consists of Waco.
Yes.
The upcoming show about Waco starring Tim Riggins, who has a real name that I don't care about.
Taylor Kitsch.
And then 23 hours of... rerunning the Indiana Jones movies and Roadhouse.
And also How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
I need to get this channel.
Yeah, it's formulated in the lab for us, Jess. Yes, I have Paramount TV, and anyone who would like to watch the TV event, Waco, 6-part miniseries, for which I finally expect Taylor Kitsch to be lauded. I don't know anything about the series, but I'm assuming he kills it as David Koresh.
His wig work is... already applause worthy.
I don't know. I think the casting director who cast Taylor Kitsch as a cult leader is maybe a little too on the nose, but I am all in for it.
Yeah, I'm excited.
High Maintenance returned to HBO this week Friday. I watched the first episode last night. I was saddened to learn that Ben... What's the guy's name?
Oh, yeah. I forget.
Ben, I can't remember. The guy who plays the guy and Katya Blickfield are the two creators and married creators of the show. Bad news, you guys. They got divorced. She left him on election night 2016.
Yikes.
They wrote all of High Maintenance, the first 2 seasons, solely by themselves after it was a series of Vimeo shorts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very concerned that because of their somewhat acrimonious but still working relationship, they hired a writer's room. So this season is the first one that features sort of outside voices. And I thought High Maintenance season one and two were just so beautiful that I was worried it would affect it. I'm pleased to announce that the first episode seemed so tonally in line with the show. And I also thought I was worried that I'd be able to see his sadness and his depression coming through on the screen. And he's the greatest actor of our generation. I was thinking about their breakup for the first 10 minutes of the show. And then...
Is she still involved in the show?
Yes, she is. They both are. And then I surrendered to the show and it just became its own thing again. And I'm delighted to see that the return of High Maintenance.
Oh, good. I can't wait to get back into that. And I hope they never legalize weed in New York, because I don't know what it would do to High Maintenance. If they ever get close, I will start going to town hall meetings in New York and being like, you guys.
Not in my backyard.
What about High Maintenance?
Not in the guy's backyard, you guys. I feel like the beauty of High Maintenance is that even if they legalized weed, you would still want to have that guy in your house every week instead of going to a dispensary.
Yeah, that's true.
And yeah, I mean, delivery is obviously more convenient than going and standing in line somewhere. So
yes, as we found out here in San Francisco.
Yeah, pot's the new brunch, you guys.
Oh my God.
The lines everywhere.
Yeah.
Hopefully as they expand the licenses, that will become less of a problem.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder if it'll be like brunch where, you know, there's one place that's inexplicably popular where people will wait 2 hours, even though there's another one around the corner that has pretty good eggs, you know, like you could just get in, get a table right now.
Who knows? Who knows?
Okay. Finally, are you watching The Bachelor?
I am not.
Wow.
But
I thought you were going to hop back into January.
I wanted to, but I've got a lot on my plate. I'm doing the whole 30 this January, you guys, and I just feel like taking on one more thing is just too much. But I specifically was thinking about this show in relation to The Bachelor, because this show...
End of the fucking world.
Yes, because the end of the fucking world... Like, we were saying, you mentioned in your outline that, you know, like, 22-minute shows are great. Let's get to 6-minute shows, you know, which we already had with the Vimeo seasons of High Maintenance. But it just shows, like, the difference between Britain and America. Like, they can stuff so much into 19 to 22 minutes on British TV. And yet, we're forced to endure 2 fucking hours of The Bachelor every week in this country. And we accept it as normal. It's not normal, you guys.
No, it's awful.
Well, I mean, I realize that The Bachelor is essentially 22 minutes of TV.
Yeah.
But it's dragged out over 2 fucking hours. And if I had to watch 2 hours of The End of the Fucking World with them being, last week on The End of the Fucking World, and they just show the whole episode again, that would be annoying. So, I've also been reading the Jezebel recaps of the season of The Bachelor, and I understand that Ari is, like, the blandest.
Oh, he's boring as fuck. But I think they are overcompensating for his...
checkered past.
Complete... That... hasn't come up at all. Right now, they're playing it like he is boring. He is a realtor from Scottsdale, and he reads like a realtor from Scottsdale. But they're overcompensating for his lack of interest with, like, making it a little bit more like Bachelor in Paradise.
Oh,
like,
really?
There's more, I think, editorial, like, jokiness to it.
Oh, tell me more. Okay. Okay.
There's one woman who, like, you know, everyone's all, like, yippee about everything, like whatever date they go on, and then she's always like,
he hoves into your field of vision and everybody faints.
Yeah, but specifically, like, when they're like, you're gonna go, like, they do a demolition derby for one date and everyone's all jazzed about it, and she's like shaking with fear because for everything they do she has a traumatic experience in her background. And for demolition derby, it was literally, and they might have written this for her, but she sold it, she had a traumatic bumper car experience.
I read that in the Jezebel recap.
But instead of just making fun, like, and as she's telling this, another one of the women is in the background, like, putting on chapstick for what seemed like a half an hour. But they did, like, a like black and white dramatization of it, of like little girls in bumper cars.
That was great. And then the next episode, they're going on a dog date. Like a group of women all go to like try to get these dogs to perform in a dog show. It was the dumbest thing. But of course, she
starts crying.
Poor Fred
Willard was wheeled out for that. Yeah.
She has a meltdown because like a chihuahua bit her when she was a little girl.
Sure.
And so they did that flashback also. And they had this dog actor that like was this growling chihuahua. It was so fucking funny. And I was telling my husband
and the Emmy
watching it.
Too.
Yeah, I was saying like they cannot cut her after this because this has to be part of a trilogy.
Yeah.
And spoiler alert, she ended up getting cut, but still kind of wrapped it up.
I was
like
just about to get in.
Yeah, there was another coda to the whole dog story. She told another traumatic dog story that they also dramatized, and it was amazing. And I feel like they've been doing a lot more stuff this season to compensate for the fact that Ari is the most like aggressively boring bachelor in history. I mean, he manages to be disgusting also, but like he also this last episode, they keep talking about how he's older because he's let his hair go gray, yeah. But he's 36. Not like, well, he claims to be 36. He looks about 40. So not old by bachelor standards. But this week he was talking about how he just likes to go home and put his cardigan on these days.
Sure.
Instead of going out and partying.
Same, Ari. Same.
Yeah, same. But you also didn't need to share that with us.
Yeah.
You can keep that shit to yourself. Yeah, so if you wanted to hop back in, I'd say this is a good season. But also, I really admire you having been out of the game for as long as you
maybe
have.
Maybe I will get back in and then we can do our Bachelor recap at the end of every show.
Yeah.
This week on The Bachelor.
Because there's definitely a shortage of people talking about The Bachelor out there. But
I feel like we have things to add to that conversation, Jess.
There's so much to say. All right. Well, I think that's all we've got.
Yeah. Please do watch The End of the Fucking World.
Yeah. You won't regret it. It's really good.
Yeah. It's really, really good. And yeah. Also, if you'd like us to start reviewing or recapping The Bachelor each week, we'll put up a poll. You can vote. We won't really do that. I don't know how to do that on Twitter. But yeah, if you guys are invested in that, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
I know that we have some Bachelor stans in the audience.
Yeah. Yeah. And as always, anything else you guys are watching and enjoying or, you know, think we should hop in on.
Yeah.
As long as it's not on some stupid fucking network that I don't get. Don't even talk to me about that.
I think we have some shows coming up. If you'd like to jump in, we're going to be talking about Smilf, the stars?
Showtime.
The Showtime dramedy. We're going to be talking about that coming up. We'll also talk about Detectorist Season 3, currently available on Acorn TV.
Yeah.
Hashtag not an ad. We're not being sponsored by Acorn TV, you guys. Although, Acorn TV, if you want to get at us, we're open.
We'll re-up on that free trial.
We're at BFF TV. We have not canceled ours. It's been over a week.
Shit.
So they've got us. But we're at BFF TV on the radio, Acorn TV. Via Gmail or your Twitter.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and we'll be back next week.
Keep it here on BFF.fm.
Yeah, stay tuned for Indie Rock Radio Girl. But when I